Welcome to the Hemophilia edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the hemophilia community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent at Rare Disease Advisor. We're here today in Cambridge, Massachusetts with Doug Kerr, Chief Medical Officer at Generation Bio. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Could you please tell us a bit about Generation Bio and how you came to be with this company?
Sure. Generation Bio is a company based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. It's about 4.5 years old and is really all about creating a next generation of gene therapy that enables redosable, durable expression of a protein missing in a genetic disease patient.
Could you talk about why redosable gene therapy is so important?
Sure. I mean, we've seen amazing advances with essentially first generation gene therapies, namely AAV, but they are one-time therapies. You can only give that therapy once. And so when you're correcting a genetic disease, you've only got one shot. You've got to get it right at the first dose. But individuals are different, and not everybody responds in the same way to that dose. The problem with AAV is that if you don't get it right up front, there's nothing you can do about it. So what we thought as we created Generation Bio is that we would love to have the durability that AAV has, but to be able to individualize it for every patient, to be able to get into the right range. And if you don't get it on the first dose, that's okay. You can go back and do it again. And so that is a fundamental shift from how gene therapy is currently considered, where it's a one-time, hope you get it right, lifelong cure. You know, it also turns out that AAV, although the expression of the corrected transgene, is long-lived. It's not permanent. It's not forever. And we see that in individuals with, for example, hemophilia, given AAV gene therapy, the expression wanes over time. So what you really need in order to be able to give lifelong benefit is the opportunity to redose if and when expression wanes. And we think Generation Bio is developing that type of a platform.
At present, hemophilia patients rely on enzyme replacement therapy, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Can you talk about that versus the potential of a redosable gene therapy?
Right. So lots of advances have been made in hemophilia back from the days decades ago when individuals had to be administered recombinant factors that were very short-lived. They had very short half-lives. And so you had to administer intravenously factor 3 to 5 to 7 times per week. And really over the last 15 years or so, long-acting factors have been developed that can confer hemostasis, meaning the ability to clot, given once or twice or 3 times a week. But that still is a massive burden to hemophilia patients. And it's not perfect, because even after they've administered recombinant factor, you still can bleed in some situations. Say a car accident, say surgery, say a fall. So what if you could give a gene therapy that chronically administers into the blood sufficient factor VIII to prevent bleeding in virtually all considerations under any circumstances? That would be really amazing for patients to essentially be able to forget that they've got the disease. And that's really what we're working toward. And there is no golden, perfect level of factor VIII across the entire community. Each individual patient is different. And some patients may want 10% of normal. Some patients might want 50% of normal. And we think this platform allows that. And once you get to that desired level of factor VIII, we think that will last for years. We don't know how long, but for years, and we'll follow that patient. And if we need to redose at some point down the road, we'll do that.
Before we get into the platforms that you're that you would like to employ in towards a redosable gene therapy, can you talk a bit about the disadvantage of having to of being able to take AAV if you have certain immune responses? For example, with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, many patients, boys, would not qualify because they have an immune response.
Yeah, that's an important point. So AAV, as a virus out in the community, is all around us. And so individuals are exposed to it, just wild type normal AAV, not even in the context of gene therapy. And once an individual has been exposed, they then develop antibodies to it, and they can never get a gene therapy based on that viral vector. So they are excluded from clinical trials, and they would not benefit from it even if that therapy is approved. And all of that is really based on a particular protein on the surface of AAV called the capsid. Our therapy does not have a capsid, and so there is no need to screen for AAV antibodies or to exclude patients on that basis. We are leading with hemophilia, but we think that this approach would be amenable to many diseases in which delivery of a gene to the liver or other tissues can benefit the symptoms and disease progression of that disorder. So, for example, phenylketonuria is an inborn error of metabolism where there's a deficiency in an enzyme and it causes a toxic buildup of certain metabolites. Gaucher disease is a lysosomal storage disorder. Same thing, but both we think can be corrected by the delivery of an enzyme or protein and having the liver kind of correct the body on that basis. Wilson disease is another one. And these are all in the liver. And I'll make one additional point that we believe that we can ask the liver to produce and secrete therapeutic antibodies. And so in this case, we're not talking about a genetic disorder, but we're essentially using the liver as a biofactory to secrete into the blood an antibody. And one can imagine that antibody produced by the liver, delivered by this platform, confers protection, for example, against infections. And I'll just give you an example of where that might matter. Obviously, COVID is an important disease still ravaging individuals around the world. Many people who are immunosuppressed do not respond to a vaccine because of their immunosuppression. And so you can give them a vaccine, but they don't develop protective immunity. What we would do and what we would like to develop is a program that delivers therapeutic and protective antibodies against COVID or other infections produced by the liver. That doesn't require the immune system to do it. We're actually programming what the liver would produce and secrete. So that could be important, we think, for COVID in patients who are immunosuppressed. But you can imagine that for other infectious diseases as well, conferring protection.
Very interesting. Your presentation at the recent World Orphan Drug Congress by video focused on the three core elements that Generation Bio hopes to use. And you mentioned the closed-end DNA, cell-targeted LNP, and enzymatic manufacturing. Could you explain those elements?
Sure. Those are the three important pillars that we think will enable us to move forward. And just to say that non-viral gene therapy, which is what we're doing, we're not doing AAV, it's a non-viral gene therapy approach, has been tried for 30, 40 years. It's hard. And we've had to invent essentially aspects of each of those three pillars in order to make progress. So the first is, what DNA will we deliver? And we call it SEDNA, for closed-ended DNA. And it is really a special DNA vector. In some ways, it looks like AAV. It has what are called inverted terminal repeats at the end of that DNA molecule. But it confers durable gene expression, very much like AAV. The other aspect of SEDNA is that you can incorporate large genetic cargo inside of it. So you can go after genetic diseases that are caused by mutations in large genes, too large for AAV. And there are other things that we could do in terms of making more potent constructs by use of that DNA vector. So that's all of the kind of first pillar of this. The second is, how do you get it there? How do you get that DNA gene therapy vector to the cell of interest? And that's a really important concept, and we've had to invent the delivery vehicle itself. And we call that cell-targeted lipid nanoparticle. And what that means is that there is a targeting protein on the surface of the lipid nanoparticle that can direct that DNA specifically and efficiently to a tissue of interest. And we've been talking about the liver, but it's not just the liver. We believe we have the ability to target not only to the liver, but potentially to the retina, to muscle, to tumors. And so that delivery vehicle really is important, because what it does is it maximizes the delivery of our SEDNA to the tissue of interest and minimizes the delivery to other tissues. And then the third aspect that I think is really unique and special about Generation Bio is, how do you make that DNA vector? And the traditional way has been through large bioreactors and using cells to produce these DNA vectors. But we've developed a completely new way to make SEDNA that is literally done in a test tube. No cells, no bioreactors, just snippets of DNA that are stitched together and purified. So what are the advantages of that approach? First, that DNA is very pure. We know exactly what it is, and it's very pure. Second, we can get this very quickly. We don't have to wait weeks and months for cells to produce the SEDNA. We can literally make it in a day. And third, we can make lots of it, right? So we are interested not only in rare diseases, but prevalent diseases. And so we believe using this system, you can make tens of millions, hundreds of millions of doses at scale. And you know, this is very analogous to the vaccines, right? So mRNA vaccines, we're all aware of what a huge benefit it has been to the planet to have mRNA vaccines, both how rapidly they were produced and how many hundreds of millions of doses were produced. Same story here. We're not using mRNA, we're using DNA, but it's very analogous, and that's really what we're striving to get to.
Wow, incredible. At what point in their lives would you be able to treat patients with hemophilia or any of the other targeted diseases?
It's a very important question, because You know, hemophilia often starts in the first decade of life. That's when the first bleeds occur. Now, if you have a one-shot gene therapy, you have to wait until all of the cells in the body essentially have stopped dividing. That's when they're essentially 18. So the approvals of AAV gene therapy will be limited to 18 years and above. But with our redosable gene therapy, you can go right at the onset of disease. And so as the tissue and the body grows, you may need another dose to keep up with that growth and have enough factor VIII levels in the body. That's okay. We'll redose. And it may be more frequently during childhood and adolescence, but that's okay. We'll follow factor VIII levels. And then once you get to adulthood, you may need it every 3 to 5 years. We're not sure, but very infrequently. But that allows you to go at the onset of disease, maybe preventing all bleeds and really enable the patient to truly forget that they've got hemophilia.
Wow. Business question for you, if I may. Many companies are pursuing gene therapies in many diseases. As you mentioned, some have been after this for 30, 40 years. What about Generation Bio would make your business model particularly successful?
Yeah, I think that's an important question, too. I mean, first, I would say that with these, essentially the inventions that we just spoke about, it enables a broad platform. There are literally hundreds of diseases that you could go after and really have a meaningful clinical impact. And part of that is going after diseases that other gene therapies can't go after, because the gene is too big or things like that. Part of it is that you could go at the onset of disease, right? Really at the very beginning, which AAV cannot do. So what we think is that this platform enables really transformative clinical benefits. If you have a bunch of diseases that you can go after and you think you can make meaningful impact in each, that's a good business model, right? This is really what the world needs, is the ability to go really early in disease and have a really meaningful impact at an appropriate cost to really save lives and morbidity.
Do you think that your approach might work for a disease like Duchenne?
I do. The dystrophin gene, as you say, is too big to fit within AAV. And several companies have been developing these small cassettes of parts of the dystrophin gene. It's not clear how effective those small cassettes of mini or micro dystrophin will work. But that's not the only problem in Duchenne muscular dystrophy. It is, how do you get enough to the muscle? And only the muscle. That's really what you want, skeletal muscle and cardiac muscle. And so here again, delivery and targeting to the muscle is a really important issue. It hasn't been solved by AAV. And we think that ultimately we can develop a program that will specifically and efficiently deliver a dystrophin gene to the muscle, and that may have really substantial benefit in dystrophin boys.
Interesting.
DMD boys.
What's your timetable for development of a redosable gene therapy for starting with hemophilia?
Right. We are leading with hemophilia. We are still in the preclinical phase, so we are not in clinical trial testing at this point. We won't be until 23. So here we are in 21. We believe we will be testing this in hemophilia patients in 23. Mm-hmm. And that may sound like a long time, and it is for people living with hemophilia, but this is a really important and potentially transformative platform for gene therapy. We're working really hard to understand and optimize this technology, but that takes some time, and what we don't want to do is rush it to the clinic. We want to understand all the aspects of that And then when we do go into the clinic, we can test this not only in hemophilia, but many of those other diseases that I talked about.
And how is the hemophilia community receiving receiving your research? What's been the reaction so far?
Well, we have spoken to the hemophilia community several times and hemophilia experts. And, you know, I would say that they're incredibly excited about the potential of this platform. And everybody that we've spoken to has really indicated there is a need for something beyond the AAV-based gene therapy. There still is huge unmet need in hemophilia, and much of that unmet need cannot be met by the first generation gene therapies. I will also say that there is a bit of a wait and see approach, and we think that's totally appropriate. We are early. We are marching toward the clinic, but we're doing so in a very careful way. So we don't want to raise expectations too high too soon, because this community has been through a lot with a lot of companies, and we want to be very careful about how we earn the trust of this community going forward.
Dr. Kerr, thank you so much for your time. It's been very informative. This is Larry Luxner with Rare Disease Advisor. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.